When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Requires new line. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 40p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Coming up next, please join global life and success strategist Angela Carr Patterson for another episode of Soulful Conversations Radio Talk Show. Angela and her guests will discuss the lessons they've learned from the stories they dare to share, from relationships and love to wellness and money. Listen as they delve deep into conversations that awaken your soul. And now, here's Angela Carr Patterson at Soulful Conversations, informative, inspiring, and transforming.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Soulful Conversations Radio. I'm your host, Angela Carr Patterson, and I'm so delighted to have you join us for another exciting episode of Soulful Conversations Radio. Today is a beautiful day, and it doesn't matter what you're going through today. Let me tell you, you have the power to change it. You have the power to language your life. You have the power to decide what kind of day you're going to have. So use that power. Use that power. And while you're doing it, sit for a moment and have a soulful conversation with us right here. You see, when something goes wrong, we talk about it with others. And if the issue is shared, the conversation spreads where people can discuss it, add to it, refine it. And when this happens, solutions are discovered and new perspectives of a better way begins to emerge. And you know what I call this process? I call it a soulful conversation. Yes, those conversations that goes deep enough, goes deep enough to get to the truth and awaken your soul. And I want you to be sure to stay with us for the entire show. We do have a very important show today. We're going to tackle a topic that is huge. It's one of the number one words that's Googled every day, the number one word that's Googled every day, depression. And what we want to do is we want to talk about removing the stigma of depression in order to find hope and healing for those who struggle in that. We've got a guest coming on that is an expert. She's executive director of the Lee Thompson Young Foundation. And any of you who know Lee Thompson Young, he was a young actor in Hollywood, doing really well. He's known by most as the famous Jet Jackson, and a very good friend of mine. In fact, I was the one that discovered Lee and trained him and took him to New York, and his career continued to boom after that. So I was his first agent. And so, of course, in I think it was 2014, Lee committed suicide. He was currently on the show Rosalie and Al's a detective show, and he was doing very well. The show had got picked up another season, and I think it was like the third or fourth season, and he was Detective Frost in the height of his career, doing really well. And we'll talk a little bit about that today. And we have Lauren Carson. And she's the executive director of the foundation, and she's going to share her story of how she's a victim of depression. Well, she suffered from clinical depression, and she attempted suicide twice. So she's going to tell her story, and hopefully her story is going to help someone that's listening. So if you know of someone who struggles with any type of mental disorder, bipolar disorder, whatever that it could be, because we all have something going on with us. And I want you to invite them to join us today. You know, join us here at SoulfulConversationsRadio.com. Tell them to go to SoulfulConversationsRadio.com or SoulfulConversationsRadio.net. Also, they can call in and listen online and even ask questions and join in on the conversation at 347-843-4620. That's 347-843-4620. 0. And so while we're waiting, and also go ahead and send a tweet, a post, and a pin. What is it that you guys do? I mean, with so many ways that we can communicate, whatever that is, I want you to get out there and share that this is an important show that they need to listen to. And so join us right here at Soulful Conversations Radio. And while we're waiting, we're going to bring in our two co-hosts. We have Ms. Susan Walsh and Ms. Brandy. Are you there? Brandy Richard with us this morning. Hi, ladies. How are you?
Good morning.
Hi,
good morning.
How are you?
Good. Today is a really important topic. So we're going to delve into that. But before we talk about that and Lauren comes on, how was your weekend? How was your weekend, Brandy? You've been traveling. You've been on the road.
I can't keep still.
I know.
You're
in the air.
I was in D.C. last week, and I took a quick jump over to Baton Rouge to participate in the My Louisiana Summit, which was about helping people to advocate for their issues and helping people to understand how to get engaged in the process of making their communities better, which I'm all about that. And I got a chance to meet these great young women while I was there who were volunteering at the summit, and they just blew me away because I didn't understand young women having corporals to answer to and walking around in military pants and boots. And they were so diligent, and they worked really hard, but they were there doing community service in order to work towards getting their high school diploma. Some had participated in the program voluntarily. Some had been, like, commanded to participate in the program. And I was just on the hallway talking to them, and I was like, hold on, wait a minute. Maybe I didn't come here to moderate a panel on gender pay equity. Maybe I came here to talk to you guys.
So I just
changed my whole conversation, shared some books with them, shared some conversations with them, and it was really, really powerful. So I had a great, great weekend.
And what I like about that is they didn't just, those that were demanded to go there, it wasn't about punishment, but it was really about changing their lives. I mean, you know, giving them a hope for a future. So I think that is awesome. There used to be something called the Marine Institute that was similar to that because my friend Roscoe Wilson used to be over like an entire, Asia Wilson's father used to be over an entire area, like he district, region, and he had several states. And these kids went to this institute, and it was kind of like a boot camp slash behavior modification, and they were for kids that had, you know, gotten in some trouble, but they did a lot of great things with them. So I think we need more of that. And so kudos to you.
And I just felt like they needed to see people who liked them. So kids need upliftment from people outside of their peer group and outside of their parents sometimes, because sometimes their parents can get down on them. So it was great.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be here.
To see people who like them. I like that. Okay, great. Miss Susan, how was your weekend?
Just wonderful. Just with family and grandkids and all that good stuff. All that good stuff, yes. Yes. How about yours, Ann? How's Mr. Bill?
Oh, girl, I'm still playing nurse to this man that had this knee surgery. And y'all pray for me because all of a sudden, you know, he just thinks that he has all these things that he needs to do, and he needs this, me, his driver, to drive him all around town. And on Sunday, we have a house that's vacant, so we're renting it out, so we had to show it on Sunday. And so, you know, I've got to help him. I got to get the crutches and get him in the house and get him situated, open the door, everything for him. And then so once we got back in the car, he says, well, I need to go check on a couple of my properties. And I was like, oh, really? So, you know, they're like on opposite sides of town. So I said, okay, I'm going to be patient and nice, and I'm going to be loving and kind and supportive. And everybody knows I'm not a great driver. I don't like to drive. So I'm driving, and we're going all over town. And then so he says, well, on the way back, I think I want to get some ice cream. So we stop, and we get ice cream. Girl, I couldn't get him back to this house quick enough and get him situated and get him fed. I was done with him. He doesn't even know I was done with him. But I was done. So yesterday, we had to go to the DMV to get his, handicaps thing, and then he had some more places he needed to go to the bank and different places, and then we had to show the house, and then we had to go to one of the properties and put no trespassing signs on it. So I had to go to Lowe's and to Home Depot to get the sign. And so when I parked, he started unbuckling his seatbelt. I said, "Where are you going?"
You just stay put.
I said, "You stay here. You do not need to get out the car. You're too slow. It's too..." By then it was hot. It was hot. You know South Carolina is hot in the summer. And
yeah.
I'm like, okay, you stay put. I can get a sign.
One thing I learned a long time ago, and is never ever pray for patience because it will be tested.
Girl, it's been tested. But I am doing so well. I'm so proud of myself.
I know, man.
I'm so proud of myself. And so therapy starts tomorrow, physical therapy. So I'm going to drop him off and go shop.
There you go. Need a little therapy.
I need
shopping
some therapy.
I'm gonna drop
now
off
look
the
at but the example that you're like it's setting for me. I'm supposed to want to do those things. What are you talking about? You were talking. You didn't want to go.
And I am really laying it on for breakfast, and I am looking at myself, and I'm saying, who are you? But I guess I'm just in this space, and I am serving and being so kind and being a nurse. And it's like the more I do, the more he asks, you know. And I'm like,
okay,
really. So I'm going to get through this week. Next week, I'm calling Gary. I'm calling all of his friends.
There you go.
I'm lining up his friends. I'm going to line them up. Look, I need the cavalry. But
okay,
I feel so bad for him
because
he's in pain, you know, that knee surgery. And so I just really feel sorry for him. But, girl, last night I was done. You could have stuck a fork in me. I was done. I came in the room and he was sitting in the chair. I just did a U-turn.
Thank goodness for Big Al.
What you talking about? Oh, God. I'm going the
That's
other
the
side
reason
of
I can't
there.
Downsize.
Right. We started to downsize, but I changed my mind. We need all the space, every last bit
right.
of it.
That's right.
So
that's
I can
right.
pretend he's not here.
But that
was my weekend, y'all. I mean, I was a wet mop. I mean, and I'm running. I'm doing. And so,
well,
Saturday I have tickets to go see Smokey Robinson because our daughters, Glenda, daughter, and Krista, and my daughter Krista had bought tickets. So Lavette was like, "So, Mother, you need me to dad sit?" I said, "Yep. I need you here. I'm leaving at 6:15." Mm-hmm. So they came over and sat with them, and I left, and I had a ball at the concert. I'm glad we went.
He's
look
the
how
best.
You were blessed for being obedient
huh?
and supportive.
I know.
Said, look how you were blessed
and
for being obedient and supportive.
I know, and you know, it's a concert for seniors because it was like all my mother friends were there. I was like, oh my God, they're coming in crutches, they're coming on walkers, they're coming in wheelchairs, they're coming with canes, but they were out there. I thought we was at an AARP meeting, but let me tell you, Smokey did his thing. He did his thing.
Yeah.
I had a ball, and the concert was over at 9:30. So that was early for us. And I said, okay, Glenda, we got to go get something to eat. I'm just not going home right now. Not right now. So we went and got something to eat. But I needed that. I really was. You're right, Brandy. I was blessed. So that was my weekend.
Right.
So anyway, well, let's get into our topic. I think our guest is here. And we're going, you know, in the recent news, we've read about the death of celebrities Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, and of course so many others before them, including my friend, dear friend, and Lee Thompson Young. You know, I met Lee when he was 11, I think it was 11, yeah. And I remember him coming into my office. At that time I had an agency, model and talent agency. He came in and he kissed my hand and gave me a business card that said Lee Thompson Young, actor. And I was like, oh, my God, this little boy, he's charming. And I said, all I need you to do is just stay away from my daughter, you know. So really, you know, got to know him and realized that he was such a talented young man. And so many days after school, I would bring him to my house and not even to my studio, and then just work with him and coach him in acting. And his mother and I got on the plane, took him to New York. I made some appointments with some agencies there, and the rest is history. You know, his career started with the famous Jet Jackson, and it just blossomed. And I knew he would probably have ended up being a real superstar in the acting industry, but Lee struggled with bipolar disorder. He was diagnosed into his teens, and so those and so many other mental illnesses and challenges, I think they're more than we really know that go undiagnosed.
Yep.
But once we heard the news of Kate Spade and Anthony, I think it sent a flow of fear that I saw on social media. And then I saw people everywhere were sharing their stories, you know, of depression and the bouts with depression and suicide. And people really came forward and just shared their truth. And I thought, wow, bold. They were very courageous. And so I said, today we've got to delve deep into some facts about depression and elevate our audience's awareness about what's available, the available resources to help them, and also to remove the stigma that's placed on depression and other challenges and offer some real truth. And our guest here today, Lauren Carson, she's the executive director of the Lee Thompson Young Foundation, and she herself has struggled with this in the past, and she's going to share a little bit about her story and how she was able to move her life forward. And Lauren is, she's an Atlanta native and the University of Virginia alumnus. And she's the director of Lee Thompson Young Foundation, executive director, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting positive mental health education, resources, and support. Through her work with the Lee Thompson Young Foundation and as a mental health advocate and speaker, Lauren is currently a contributing blogger for the Huffington Post, has been featured in Refinery 29, Hers Magazine, and Atlanta Black Star. She was also featured as a panelist at the 2016 Clinton Global Initiative University and made Young Nonprofit Professional Network's 2016 30 Under 30. Oh, wow. Lauren continues to lend her voice and platform to mental health awareness and empowerment of young women and girls. She's most proudly the daughter of Dr. Eric and Martha Carson, and big sister to Charlene, Kia, Eric, and Eric Carson. And so let's welcome for the first time, and hopefully not the last, to Soulful Conversations Radio.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. We really appreciate you being here. And we know you've got another appointment, so we're going to get right into this conversation. I probably need you while I was being this nurse yesterday.
I heard you're doing a great job, though.
Girl, I am giving it 100%. I am giving it 100%. I'm a wet rag at night, but I'm doing it during the day. So let's talk about your story a little bit. You know, tell us, I know you said you were diagnosed with clinical depression at 15. What exactly is clinical depression?
So clinical depression is considered chronic depression. So that means that I have a chemical imbalance, and that causes me to have bouts of depression, which could be considered more commonly as like sadness, hopelessness, things such as that. But it kind of comes on out of nowhere. The other kind of flip side of that is individuals that experience situational depression. So that may be the loss of a job, loss of a loved one, divorce, things such as that. But with clinical and chronic depression, that means that there's a chemical imbalance. For me personally and for most people, depression actually runs in my family. So it can be hereditary as well. So that was, as you mentioned, I was diagnosed at the age of 15 with clinical depression.
Okay. Wow. And how did your parents know?
I would say for a while they kind of fought it, just being honest. I think that while my father is a physician, a lot of the stigma associated with mental health and mental illness especially runs pretty deep in the African-American community. So it was a little bit difficult for them to distinguish between abnormal and normal adolescent behavior, which is the struggle for most parents is, you know, when a child asks out, is that something that's just contributing to, or is that just caused by just, you know, hormone, you know, changes and social changes and academic changes, or is it something else that's going on? So kind of over time, they were seeing the difference in their relationship with me, the relationship that I had with my siblings. I was acting out that was a lot different from my normal demeanor and my normal affect. And it was lasting for significant periods of time. So that period of time and the difference between the affect and behavior and persona, those are the things to really look for if you're worried that an adolescent may be experiencing mental health difficulties opposed to just adolescent typical behavior.
Wow, okay. So that can be hard to detect because I think most, you know, most parents just think, oh, she's a teenager, it's hit in, and, you know, or he's just going through this and not realizing that it could be a chemical imbalance. And what your advice would be when in doubt, get it checked, right?
It would be, yeah. So, again, it's really looking at the period of time. So if your teenager has a bad day or even a bad week, that may not be abnormal. But you want to look for things over a specific period of time, so normally like 2 weeks or more. So normally that like 3 week range or even kind of the consistency of the behavior popping up. And things to look for are it's normal to want more privacy when you're becoming an adolescent. However, if you're being very secretive and keeping things and it seems like you're up to something, that may be something that's seen as abnormal. And then changing between adolescent like hobbies and recreation things, that may be normal. But if they're not replacing it with any other activities and isolating themselves, that may be something that's seen as abnormal.
Okay. That's good. Ladies, y'all can jump in with questions anytime you want to as well.
So I do have a question. What is the best way to find out if or, like, what battery of tests, if any, should you go about bringing your children to in order to find out if they are depressed?
Yeah, so the parents, you're going to be the first line of defense. You're with your children most often. You know the most about your child. So the key things to do, at least initially, are to have a conversation, to be honest and upfront about some of the behaviors that you've seen. and to ask if there's anything that they want to share with you. If, you know, you can ask very direct questions. You know, are you feeling sad? Are you feeling, you know, hopeless? Like, you know, getting a little bit deeper into the emotions and the feelings that they're having, outside of kind of just surface, you know, seeing someone who looks a little bit sad, but finding out, like, what really would you describe that as? And once you're able to describe it, is there something that's kind of prompting that, or is it just kind of across the board? Are you sad because your boyfriend broke up with you, or are you just kind of sad because you're sad? The next step would be to reach out to a mental health professional. Can be a social worker, can be a licensed mental health provider. It could be a peer specialist here in Georgia. It could be a psychologist. I probably wouldn't go the route quite yet of going to a psychiatrist, but you could also go to your primary care doctor. In a lot of cases, the medical community is moving more towards having primary care doctors be available to recognize symptoms, to even prescribe medication. So if you have a primary care doctor or, you know, a family practitioner that you go see, that would also be another kind of starting point as well, maybe when you're going to get your child's physical. And then I would also say in a lot of cases, especially for minority youth and also minority adults, a lot of our symptoms are psychosomatic. So that means that they'll manifest themselves in physical ailments. So you may hear of headaches, you know, backache, you know, joint pain, things like that. So you may, it may be kind of a two-pronged process of seeing your primary care physician to say, hey, you know, my daughter, my son, he's experiencing some headaches, but I'm also noticing these other symptoms. Is that something that we can look at? Would you potentially refer us out to someone if possible?
That's interesting. Very interesting.
I'll tell you something. Lauren, thank you so much for being here. This is Susan Walsh from South Carolina. And thank you so much. This is a very difficult topic. And we as a family have experienced it with my brother since he was 12. And I'm leading into something because I want to ask you specifically since you have experience as well. But he, back then, he's almost 58. So back then, you know, no one really knew, you know, what is bipolar, what is manic depression. What we started seeing was he was either, it was the highest highs or the lowest lows. Mm-hmm. And my parents were older when they had him, so they weren't in the know. And so I want the listeners to really pay attention to your young teenagers, particularly if you start seeing them having struggling in school or struggling with friendships or you know, just going inward. He went very, very inward, and then, sad to say, he turned to drugs. Because they made him feel better, and, you know, street drugs, that kind of thing. And, you know, kids don't know. They just know they don't feel good, that something's wrong, but they don't even know how to tell you. And my parents didn't know the questions to ask. So I'm grateful that we're having this conversation because, you know, teenage suicide is number one, you know, out there right now. And for all kinds of reasons. So, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's definitely something to be addressed. And I'm just sorry that, you know, back then we didn't know what we didn't know. We had to learn it the tough way. So thank you for being here today, and thank you for being transparent and honest. And I just hope and pray, you know, before I have a conversation, I know Angie's the same way, if God let somebody get this today, let it make a difference. Mm-hmm. In somebody's life today, and I truly believe it will. I'm so grateful for this today.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah, that's so true.
Thank you. I would say I guess kind of sadly that's the truth for a lot of people, that yeah. there's symptoms in adolescence. I mean, about 50% of mental illness that's diagnosed, the symptoms started between the ages of like 12 and 15.
Yes.
So as you mentioned, we definitely have to keep an eye out for our youth. But I also would say, and this is kind of a difficult concept to discuss, but also not putting our projections on youth. And what I mean by that, in a lot of cases, parents want their child to be okay. So
yeah.
because of that, they'll ignore various symptoms that they're seeing, not because, you know, they're a neglectful parent, but because they're so hopeful for their child. They're, you know, they don't even want to fathom that their child may be experiencing such difficulty that maybe something that, based on, you know, popular TV and, you know, even the recent suicide completions that we discussed, that may be their reality. So they don't even want to address it because they're projecting their hope and their belief that their child will come through this on their mm-hmm. own, on the youth, and not necessarily getting them the assistance that they need at the time. What that means is to really put ourselves aside, to put our relationships with the youth aside, to put our fears aside, to put our, you know, projections of their future aside, and really address the situation as it is in the present.
Right.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
When you talk
that's
about that,
stigma.
It makes me think about the fact that we don't sometimes find out about young people's issues with depression because, of course, we assume they're acting out. But we also mm-hmm. sometimes, at least in my family, push them towards the church or push them towards prayer or counseling in the church instead of other people that can help them. And are there dangers of doing that?
Mm-hmm. There definitely are. I will say, as a society and even, you know, the church community is getting a lot better with referring to mental health providers. As I always tell people, God made mental health providers as well. It's another source
yeah.
and resource and tool that should be utilized when necessary. Mm-hmm. I think that prayer and faith and spirituality are definitely a protective factor. And what I mean by protective factor are there's risk factors, so there's various circumstances, they can be environmental, they can be hereditary, that make you more susceptible to mental health issues. However, there's also protective factors. So spirituality doesn't need to be completely taken out of the conversation
mm-hmm.
when it comes to mental illness, but they also need to, when there's, you know, symptoms, warning signs, when there's a crisis, there needs to be professionals that come into play. So
mm-hmm.
it's definitely not taking spirituality and faith in the church out of the conversation, because that can be very beneficial to any individual, whether it's a youth,
mm-hmm.
whether it's an adult, to their recovery, to their mental well-being overall. However, when there is a crisis, when professional assistance is needed, it is most appropriate to look towards mental health professionals, just like, you know, with the church. If you're looking for a spiritual, if you have a spiritual issue or there's something that you need to discuss spiritually, you go to the church. You don't necessarily go to a doctor. So kind of vice versa with that as well.
I know I read somewhere where when you do add in the spiritual piece, that the that studies have shown that the healing process tends to be more permanent or last longer. And I think a lot of that has to do with because now you're able to base your identity on something that's bigger than you. I think a lot of that has to do with it as well. But, you know, I think we just have to add in all the protective factors, you know, coupled with the therapy, the spirituality, and some other healing modalities that's based on the individual person, because what would work for me may not work for someone else. My biological father, people know that I'm a father's daughter. My dad was not in my life growing up, but my biological father actually suffered from he was diagnosed with schizophrenia and paranoia. And so he was institutionalized for over 40 years. You know, when he died,
wow.
He had been institutionalized for 40 plus years. So, and he had to be because, you know, he had the voices and, you know, he's gone through the gamut, the shock treatments, the medication, you know, and all of that. So he was not able to actually live on his own, you know, because so he had to be, he lived in the VA hospital, actually. Like I say, when he passed away, it had been maybe 45 years or something like that. So so he was not able, and I guess 40-plus years ago, the treatment that they gave him then was not as progressive as the treatment that he, and when I actually found him and connected with him, he was basically the shell of a man, you know, so heavily medicated until, you know, your conversations with him had to be very surface. It was almost like childlike because of the medication mm-hmm. that they kept him on. So I never really got to know him, per se, just the mm-hmm. shell of a man. And so, but we know that these illnesses can create a lot of pain for the entire families, not just that person. And so I think the more educated we are as a family, we can be more supportive of the young one, the loved one that's struggling with this. My question is, I know you, when you shared your story with me, you attempted suicide twice. Take us there and kind of help us to understand where you were that would get you to that point.
Those are very difficult times to go back to, but I mm-hmm. think that they are, as you said, very important to discuss. I think that when you talk about mental health, especially even kind of hearing the story that you just shared, and thank you for sharing that with us, we have such a negative view of mental illness. And because mm-hmm. of that, and because of the way our medical system works, that it's so reactive and not necessarily proactive when mm-hmm. it comes to mental mm-hmm. health, that mm-hmm. you don't necessarily get help in a lot of cases until you're
right.
in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
for me, in both instances, I've always been a very high functioning, so I always had clinical depression, but I was so high functioning. And what I mean by that is, like, I went to University of Virginia, that I played on the basketball team. I did all these amazing things that it was very hard for people to even fathom that I would
yeah.
ever get to a place where I would want to take my own life. So when
mm-hmm.
I'm struggling and I'm showing these symptoms, and when you're in crisis, and this is for any mental illness, this is for schizophrenia, this is for bipolar, depression, anxiety, when you're in it, it is so mm-hmm. difficult to vocalize what you need in regards to assistance and help and treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So I was mm-hmm. in a very dark place, and I think in some ways it was, with suicide attempts, it can either be, one, yes, you really want to take your life, or two, you're just ambivalent. So that means, you know, I'm just at such a dark place, I don't care which way this goes. And I think for me it was mm-hmm. more of that, where mm-hmm. I did try to take my own life. I think it was a cry for help, you know, personally, for my family, but I think it also was just getting to such a dark place where, like, I just didn't care either way.
Mm-hmm.
After
mm-hmm.
my second suicide attempt, I decided, like, as crazy as it sounds, I was like, I can't live like this. Like, I really am going to die if
mm-hmm.
I don't focus on my mental well-being on a daily basis, on a moment-by-moment basis,
mm-hmm.
making sure that I'm doing things that bolster my mental well-being, that I'm around people
mm-hmm.
that bolster my mental well-being. It has to be a very active and intentional choice to live a life mm-hmm. that you're focusing on your mental well-being at all times.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and one other thing that I'd like to add with that and kind of to what you mentioned as well, it is difficult on your family. It's so difficult on your family. You know, the conversations that I've had with my brothers and sisters, my parents, it was a very traumatic it was a very traumatic experience for everyone across the board. I personally, like, my family is actually going through very similar things with my brother. And one of the things that we changed about the way that we're going through this process with my brother is we're actually doing family therapy. And with that, that's allowing us the opportunity to discuss in a very therapeutic environment these experiences that are happening and how they're affecting us, and then also being able to vocalize that to, in this instance, it's my brother who's experiencing some of the mental health difficulties, but creating a therapeutic environment where he's able to vocalize to us what's going on, and we're able mm-hmm. to assist him and hear him, but also he can hear us in a very therapeutic environment as well. So, you know, it's not always the traditional way to go, but if whatever mental health difficulties for an individual or for a group are being experienced and it's really affecting the family or friends, I really would encourage trying to do family or group therapy, because I think that that can be very therapeutic and cathartic for a lot of individuals that may be experiencing kind of the you know, bystander fact of mm-hmm. any mental health difficulties.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, go ahead, Brandy.
So was something that you could tell your family member about what you needed from them, because I think a lot of family members are, like, paralyzed and not knowing what to do to support
mm-hmm.
their loved one. So if there was something that you, as a continuing survivor of this, could tell them, like, what would you tell them to do for you, or how could they help you?
I would say be patient, and be kind. I think that when a lot of people move from a space of fear, it can get very kind of negative in general, kind of in life, but also in situations like this. And what I mean by that is, you know, when I was experiencing, my suicide attempt, I remember my father just yelling at me. And at the time, I just didn't understand, like, why he was yelling at me. But, you know, when I was able to step back, I realized that, like, he was scared. He was coming from a place of fear and was acting out. So I think that in cases when someone is experiencing a crisis, being kind, being patient, but also recognize, like, they say that women have, like, women's intuition. I think in general people have that. So if your spidey senses are tingling that something is going on, don't ignore that. In a lot of these cases, when we're hearing about people passing away or completing suicide, someone saw something. They just didn't know how to act, and they didn't know where, you know, where to go or what to say, and they didn't feel comfortable having those conversations. If something in your spidey senses is tingling, don't ignore that, because that can be the difference between life or death in some instances.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think that's so powerful and important, because all of us are most probably engaged with someone who is suffering from a mental health illness. We are scared, and we don't know how to be there for them. And so hearing that from you is really powerful. Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to point out one other resource. So there's the Mental Health First Aid. It came to the U.S., I think in like 2002. But it's now like a nationally recognized, it's almost like a first aid course. But for
Mental Health First Aid.
And you could just go online, you know, type in mental health first aid, and you can find various courses that are in your area. They're offered nationwide. I think that it's one of the best programs that I've seen that really outlines for kind of just like the layperson. You don't have to be a mental health provider to outline steps and an action plan if you ever encounter someone who may be experiencing a mental health crisis.
That's good to know. That's good to know. And, of course, we have the Lee Thompson Young Foundation, which is based out of Atlanta, and you all are in the schools and offering a lot of education and awareness there and support.
Yes. We've been very excited. We've expanded our programming. We doubled it in 2000 and between the 2017 and 2018 school year, and we expect to continue that trajectory for the next school year. But working with middle schoolers, elementary and high school, to work with them on emotional regulation, self-care methods, and coping skills. That's, like, my biggest, like, plug that I push is coping skills. Like, people reach out to me and ask, like, what happened with Anthony Bourdain? What happened with Kate Spade? And I say that, in general, Americans have horrible coping skills. Like, when very small things happen, we feel like the world is ending. And that really goes to your coping skills and your self-care methods and the things that you fall back on when times are tough. When they're tough financially, when they're tough, you know, relationship-wise, socially, in any aspect, our coping skills are things that we need to fall back on. So people really sitting down and just taking some time to recognize, you know, what are some positive coping skills that they can utilize. And those will come to the front of your brain when you're going through crisis. So those are the things that we're really pushing in the school system, is assisting students with, you know, whether they're going through academic issues or, you know, academic challenges, social, recreational, or even at home, that there's these tools and these skills that we teach them in our sessions. We do between 8 to 10 week sessions that assist them with coming up with a self-care plan, coming up with coping skills, and really assisting them with focusing on their mental well-being as they go forward.
Wow, this is so needed, so needed.
Mm-hmm.
We really appreciate. We're going to have you back, and so that we can get our audience to ask some questions and get you to answer the questions. I also know that you were the founder of the Black Girl Smile in Corporation, which is a foundation for young girls, and you're also focusing on mental awareness. Am I correct?
Yes. So we're actually going through a pivot currently. Everyone can check us out on our website, blackgirlsmile.org. But we're kind of pivoting to focus on college age. A lot of the young African-American girls that we are getting inquiries from, or parents or caregivers, are from that college age range, and I know that that's one of the times where I experience the most mental health difficulties. We're kind of coming up with some new tools, some courses, some tips and tricks that we can put out there for African-American female college students to assist them with their academic success, but also their mental wellness.
I read somewhere where college females are one of the highest stressful population in the country, that these that when female college females, that they deal with so much high levels of stress. With it's not just the grades, financial issues of, you know, staying in school, and then a lot of sexual harassment, a lot of sexual assault that they never even talk about. And so, and then the peer pressure of leaving home and all of that. And so many women, young women, really get into that whole depression in the college. So I'm so glad that you're doing that. And, you know, with me, I work with the fatherless daughter, and 63% of teen suicide are fatherless. And so it is just it's just a conversation that needs to be had, and so that we can get to the truth and then find ways to help people to cope. And I think that's it, help people to cope. My son was diagnosed with bipolar disorder a few years ago, and he lives in New York. And I know when he's in that crisis, but one of the things that he's learning to do is to give language to what he feels. So, you know, he calls and we talk, and that's the thing, teaching them how to give language to it. And he's attempted suicide twice as well. So I get that. I'm all in this. So I understand that this is a very, very important topic. In fact, you know, my second career now is documentaries, and so I'm going to do one called Our Invisible Cries in the Dark, and on mental health,
awesome.
Mental illness. And right now I'm working on one with a client called Hush, and it's we're tackling topics on sexual assault, rape, and things like that. So I've found the power of documentaries to educate, to elevate awareness, and to sway and change attitudes and behaviors. And so that's one of the reasons that I've embarked upon this new journey of sharing topics that need to be shared. Lauren, I know you got to go, but girl, you're just a wealth of information, and I know that our audience has enjoyed you being here. We're going to have you back. Will you come back?
Yeah, I would love that. Thank you guys so much for, like, creating this platform. I mean, I think even conversations like this, that starts it, you know, but there has to be a point A, and, you know, the focus that you guys are giving to this topic and this dialogue, I think, are very amazing, you know, starting point. So I really commend you guys on, you know, creating this platform and allowing me to participate.
Well, thank you. And thank you for coming, and we'll have you back. Be sure to check Lauren out at Lee Thompson Young Foundation. Is that .org? Lee Thompson Young Foundation.org.
Yes,
okay. And then be sure to check out Black Girls Smile, Black Girls, plural, smile.org. And this is Lauren Carson. Thank you so much for being here, and have a great day, Lauren. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
That was great. That was great. I mean, this is just like, I don't know anyone's family that this has not touched. You know, I just don't.
Right.
But when you talk with people, you and they talk about it, you also find out how little information that they know.
Mm-hmm.
And
and
that's important. It, where it touches all of our family, let's say when someone, cancer has touched someone's family, and most people can tell you a lot about the treatment and all of that, but when it comes to mental illness, which is still an illness, they don't have a lot of information. And then I know that my experience when my brother had his, he had a mental breakdown back in 2015, and my mother was like, Angela, something not quite right with your brother. I need you to come over. Mm-hmm. I need you to, you and Bill to come and talk to him. And like within 5 minutes, we knew we needed to take him. And we started mm-hmm. with his primary caretaker. That's where we went first. And then but that's when I found out how warped and messed up our mental health system is. And it's not mm-hmm. just here, but it's everywhere. And so that's mm-hmm. one of the other reasons that I'm doing the documentary on it, is because any topic that I feel that needs to be elevated, we're going to film it. We're going to do documentaries on. And so that's one of them. And it's challenging. It really is challenging and for the family. Mm-hmm. And have you noticed that when someone tries to attempt suicide and it didn't go through, people were quick to say they wasn't really trying to do it? I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Thing. Well, they weren't really. They were just trying to get attention. Well, yeah, maybe they were just trying to get attention. They got your attention, so what now? You know, you don't you don't bury them and humiliate them because it didn't succeed. It's time now to find them the right help. And that's why I said we got to get our brains wrapped around this.
Yep. But there's so many people who need help. Go ahead.
Big man. No, it's scary, rampant out there,
mm-hmm.
and there's such a stigma. You know, the one thing I know this: no one wants to be alone. You know, that feeling of being alone and hopeless by yourself. So, conversation is very important, and mm-hmm. everything that I've read and studied and learned is how important
to be there. My best friend, when we were raising our kids, she had it all. She was like a Kate Spade. She had it all. Two beautiful kids and a loving husband, more money than she could ever spend. And she tried six times. And it was the root, getting down to the root. In fact, y'all remember when Hugo hit, she was in the mental and the mental ward in Charleston when Hugo hit. And I mean, she didn't even care. I mean, that's how bad it was. She did not even care. But they finally found a combination of medications, and it took a long time to figure it out. But one morning I called her. I called her every morning at 7 a.m. And some days she would say hello, and some days she would not. Some days she would be giggling, and other days she would be screaming. You know, I mean, it was just horrible. And had to leave her family for over a year, you know. But but one morning I called her. No, she called me at 7 a.m., and I heard the voice that I had known for years. She was my best friend. And I was like, Beth, what's going on? She said, I'm nauseated and I feel sick to my stomach, but I've never felt better in my life. Wow. And it was the combination of the drug that she said the black blob has been lifted. She said she felt like there was a black blob around her all the time. And it was gone.
Wow.
That one day. It was like, and she's been that way ever since. I mean, it was just like a miracle. I mean, a real miracle. But that's the thing that many people don't understand, that this, it can be very medical. It's not you know, woe is me. It can be extremely medical. It was extremely medical for my brother. Here's another aspect that people need to think about, too. With someone like my brother that is 16 years in recovery from drugs and alcohol, he can't take drugs for his bipolar. He cannot take medication.
Wow.
So he has found some alternative things that have helped him dramatically. So those are out there, too. So ask your alternative docs for suggestions as well.
Yeah.
I think this conversation, like you said earlier, is it reaches beyond an hour. Like, there's just so many aspects that we could discuss. And I'm very much interested in the fact that she's focusing on college young people, because that's when I started to deal with my depression was when I was in college. So there are all these things that happen when you're growing up and you push them to the side and you don't pay attention. And then you get to the point of being away from home and it's like it all hits you in the face. And you have to deal with everything on your own. And there are no safe spaces or regular routines to fall back on. And I think for our young women, especially fatherless daughters, especially women who have experienced sexual trauma and things of that nature, that's a space where your parents really can't touch you. I've got a daughter in college right now, and it's hard for me to support her being so far away, being in a space where I can't really get access to the teachers to ask questions and all those types of things. So having that support is critical. So I'm really excited to find out more about what Lauren is doing in that space. And how we can support our young people when they go to college.
How can we support them, and maybe even creating some meetups on every college campus and giving it a different name so that it doesn't have a stigma attached to it. But you know how they have the secret, all colleges have their little secret codes. You know you can go there, but you know exactly what it is. I went on a cruise with Holland America cruise line, and it was one of the best cruises that I went on. But they have a group there for gay and lesbians. But when you see it on the together, but when on the cruise, but when you see it on the schedule of events, it's called the Dean something. It has a man's name. But everyone that's there know what that is. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it's labeled something else.
So I think that's a great way to do it. Ladies, this has been good. It's time to go. I can't believe that. Why don't we talk about maybe we can do a series of this, you know, have guests each week for maybe about 4 weeks, and we can continue to delve deep and tackle into this. So I'll work on my end, and if you know someone to bring on, just let us know, because I think we need to still talk about this some more.
I do, too. I appreciate you. You know, this is a courageous step forward. People need to hear it.
Yeah.
They need to know.
It does.
They really need to know.
All ages and all stages. Thank you so much, ladies, for being here. And thank you, Lauren Carson, for joining us. Be sure to check out the Lee Thompson Young Foundation and Black Girl Smiles, Inc., and support what they're doing. And until next time, we'll be here again next week at 10 a.m. Standard Time. But remember, all change starts with a conversation, but not just any conversation, a soulful conversation that awakens your soul. Bye-bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Soulful Conversations Radio Talk Show with Angela Carr Patterson. We want to thank our guests and our listening audience for joining us for another exciting episode. Be sure to tune in next week, where once again, Angela and her guests will share a conversation, not just any conversation, but one that awakens your soul. To contact Angela or to learn how to become a part of her growing global Awakened Life community, simply log on to www.angelacarrpatterson.com.
To promote my new flower shop, I had one place print my business cards, another print my brochures, and a third, my signs. Now my roses aren't red, my violets aren't blue, my geraniums look dead, and I don't know what to do.
Staples can help your business stand out with signs, banners, and brochures that are a true reflection of your company. And now with Staples, spend $50 or more on print and marketing services and get $5 off your next in-store purchase.
Now my business is blossoming, and I'm spending less green.
Exclusions apply. In-store only. Ends 6/23/18.